Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want. Professional wrestling.
With Mike McGuire.
The happiest Canadian camper in the world.
Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's the day of AEW Dynasty, their latest pay-per-view to be added to their yearly calendar, coming from St. Louis, Missouri tonight. And of course, we got a lot to talk about going into that show. Has it been properly promoted, do you feel? Has it made you want to spend your money? We'll talk about that and a lot more. WWE goes through a run of releases, and we've got some extra bonuses for you this week, including a quick conversation with the masterpiece, Chris Masters. This is an updated one from the last time he was on the show. And like I told you guys last week, it's a really quick chat because he was literally packing as he had to go. If you remember last week, we had Steve Macklin on. These guys were actually headed kind of on the same flight, so the same time to the airport and everything. But they always make time to chat with us, so I really appreciate that. And you'll hear what he's doing. Just came back from a trip to Australia, as a matter of fact, where he defended the Stu Hart Heritage Championship. He's also got a championship from Puerto Rico he's defending around the world. Guys keep him busy, and there is a plan to this, whether it means going back to a WWE or getting signed by a TNA or something like that, maybe even AEW, who knows? But the guy is definitely putting in the grind to get noticed out there, so we talk a bit about that. Plus, Joe Aguinaldo is going to be here. He, of course, is my resident AEW expert. And we're going to go through the card for Dynasty tonight, give you some of our thoughts going into a pay-per-view that on paper looks like it should be one of the best wrestling cards of the year, but it's all the other noise around it. That's the question. Has that been distracting from the good of the actual wrestling? Dave Meltzer's on the show this week, and if it's your first time listening, we do a very different conversation with Dave than what you might be used to in other places. It's not a lot of ratings or things like that, but it's more about just opinions, which, whether you agree with Dave on some things or not, he does have a lot of experience in covering pro wrestling, and I hope you'll enjoy that conversation, plus some of your feedback, again, towards tonight's AEW Dynasty, and whether or not you're going to be paying attention as close as you might have been other shows. But that's not all. Coming up this week, some big injuries have hit up some big names in WWE and elsewhere. We'll go over that list of WWE's post-WrestleMania releases, but they also had a bit of a twist this year. TNA had their Rebellion pay-per-view last night, which brought a few surprises, including one we hardly saw coming, plus some of your feedback to last week's episode, particularly a commentary which I had. All that's on the way, but let's take a look at some of the biggest stories this past week. It is the Five Count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
Of course, the wrestling week started off with the devastating news that Rhea Ripley is having to vacate the WWE Women's World Championship. They are holding a battle royal tomorrow night on Raw to crown a new Women's World Champion. Now, the storyline reason is due to the attack by Liv Morgan a couple weeks ago on Raw. We're not sure exactly what's keeping Rhea out or for how long, but safe to say having to vacate the title is going to have a long-lasting impact. I believe positively for Rhea. This has Triple H 2002 return written all over it. We also got an update on the condition of Seth freaking Rollins through his wife, Becky Lynch. She was appearing on Dublin's The Late Late Show and during the interview confirmed that Seth has been out for a knee surgery.
So he just got surgery on Tuesday. So he had knee surgery. He tore his meniscus a little while before WrestleMania. And so his rehab, I suppose, is running after a little three-year-old now. That'll be great for his knee surgery.
And the indie god, Matt Cardona, has announced that he had to cancel some wrestling appearances after tearing a pec muscle in a match. Now, Cardona had surgery this past week to repair the muscle and says he's still able to attend signings, but wrestling is out for a while. Well, talent is definitely on the move in the world of wrestling. Earlier this week, WWE released five talents, including Jinder Mahal, the tag team of Indus Shur, of Veer and Sangha, Zion Quinn, and Xia Li. Now, the releases weren't said to be performance-based so much as creative just not having anything for them. And in one case of Jinder Mahal, it's believed that he actually asked for his release to pursue something else. We're not sure what that is either. In other news, while nobody's confirmed whether or not he signed a new deal, Drew McIntyre is seemingly staying with WWE in the short term. He's been a big part of that European tour going on this past week. Drew was seen in a highlight package this past Friday on SmackDown. There's also some talk that McIntyre is taking some time off following WrestleMania. That would make sense with him and CM Punk eventually having their feud down the road and Punk being out with injury. And last night on TNA's Rebellion pay-per-view, we saw the TNA return of Broken Matt Hardy, as well as Sami Callihan and others. There's a lot of movement going on in wrestling rosters. It'll be interesting to see who ends up where in the next few weeks. Well, as we're waiting for what is expected to be an announcement from Minneapolis to say that they'll be hosting a future WrestleMania, there's reasons why you want a major WWE event in your city. And St. Petersburg, Florida has released some of those numbers. The city's tourism department said there was an over $47 million impact for WWE's Royal Rumble this past year. Now, numbers are still pending for WrestleMania in Philadelphia, but that number is expected to be in the hundreds of millions, especially considering how many events by both WWE and all the other promotions that make Mania Week such a big deal. Shout out to the Vancouver for WrestleMania guy. Maybe someday, man. Maybe someday. Well, it's the return of baby-making season in the world of pro wrestling. Congratulations to Ruby Soho and Jeff Angelo Parker. The couple announced they are having a baby after AEW Dynamite aired this past Wednesday. The two were involved in a dating angle on the air. And also, congratulations going out to WWE United States Champion Logan Paul. He and his partner, Nina Agdal, announced that they are expecting last week. And a gender reveal has also been posted. I'm not going to spoil that for you here, but if you want to find it, it is out there. You know, because those Paul brothers really like keeping things to themselves. And heads up, fans in Montreal, you are getting TNA's Slammiversary on Saturday, July the 20th. It is set to take place from the Verdun Auditorium. This one might be worth checking out if you're in the area here, especially with all the talent acquisitions and new matches that are coming out. Ticket information on that show is still pending, but keep an eye on our Team MOW McGuire and Wrestling Facebook page. As soon as ticket info comes out, we will let you know. Well, it was this day 22 years ago that a major wrestling star would have their first internationally televised match and go on to make history time and time again. I'll tell you who that is on the way with Dave Meltzer. Also here, a chat with Chris Masters and a lot more, including your AEW Dynasty card preview with Joe Aguinaldo. Thanks so much for being here.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcast.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
On April 21st, 2002, it was a historic day in pro wrestling for a couple of reasons. It was the date of WWF Backlash for this year. It was also the last pay-per-view or televised event that would use the letters WWF before they would get the F out. The show was main evented by Hulk Hogan winning the undisputed WWF Championship, which was won by Triple H just a month prior at WrestleMania X8 after that huge build. But it would also be the night that Brock Lesnar would have his first internationally televised match as he would beat Jeff Hardy to a pulp when the referee stopped the match after Brock powerbombed Hardy repeatedly.
Two powerbombs and looks like even getting more momentum.
Four months after that match, Brock Lesnar would find himself in the main event against The Rock to win his first WWE Championship.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, McGuire on Wrestling.
As we're getting ready for AEW's Dynasty pay-per-view debut tonight, Dave Meltzer is joining us. Dave, a very, very eventful week. A lot of talent moves going on. course, a lot of build going up to tonight's show, or has there been a lot to discuss here? How are you feeling about the build, first of all, going into AEW's Dynasty tonight? Do you think that they've done a good job focusing on the card, or do you think maybe some of the other stuff has been too much of a distraction?
Last night's show was really good. I actually just watched that this morning. I thought like the matches were great, but they really focused on the build to the show. I think Swerve and Joe has been booked as a main event at a normal level, maybe slightly better. Ospreay and Danielson, you know, very, very good. They've really focused on that one. Young Bucks FTR, it really depends on. I didn't like the way they did the Punk thing. I thought that, right. I don't think that helped. But we'll see. We'll know by the end of the week. You know, I did a poll in the morning and, you know, asking about what people thought. And most were above my baseline, which was 135. And usually they're below what my baseline is, which is also usually lower than this. I mean, it's not going to do what Revolution did. And everyone knows that. But it looks like people think it will do very good. But sometimes that, you know, when you're talking about like an online thing, they're going to be looking at it the way they look at it. And I think Danielson and Ospreay is such an incredible match that some people go, well, I can't wait to see this. So it's got to do great. But that's not necessarily the case, because like last year with Full Gear, I think most people expected more. Even though Full Gear did better than average, I think most people expected more from Forbidden Door because it had those dream matches. And while, like I said, well, you know, Omega and Ospreay, and I think that while people were super excited for it in a certain way, it wasn't, the rest of the world wasn't necessarily as super excited for it. They were just above average. So we'll see. There's, you know, there's a lot of other factors in play. You know, you're going against NBA playoffs, which is going to hurt everything in wrestling for the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think it's interesting because a few weeks ago, and we're going to run down the card here with Joe Aguinaldo in a few minutes, but a few weeks ago, everybody was talking about this build between Swerve and Joe and the signing the contract in the blood and, oh, what a great image. And, oh, this is going to be a terrible feud going into this awful, violent match, and it'll be great. And then everything else kind of took a sidestep. Then the WWE stuff and Punk stuff came in, and it was like, you know, are we really putting our best foot forward on this? So I guess like we've said before, people are going to vote with their dollars, and yeah, we'll see what the excitement is.
We'll know at the end of the week when the numbers come in. Got to watch the show. I mean, and see how it plays out. I mean, on paper, it's a great show. I can't imagine it not delivering, because there's so many matches on paper that look so good that even if like somebody gets hurt or one of the matches is overbooked in a weird way, it's still probably going to be a great show. But when I watch it, the most excited thing that I have is with Danielson and Ospreay, not Swerve and Joe. Swerve and Joe's been built fine, but we'll see. I mean, I would even say better than usual, but the one thing is we'll see. I mean, this is... The last show was a fluke because of the Sting retirement. So those numbers don't count, even though they count in their pot in the AEW revenues and everything like that. But to me, it's like that's not indicative of anything. But the key on this one is that all of last year, which was a very strong pay-per-view year, was built around MJF. And there's no MJF on this show. And Swerve is kind of in the position that MJF was in, facing Joe in the main event. And we'll see where Swerve stands. I mean, if they do really, really good, then it's a big feather in Swerve's cap as well as Danielson and Ospreay. If they don't, then it really is a big feather in MJF's cap, actually.
I do want to switch over to a conversation that's come up lately. It was a little over a week ago, Kenny Omega was doing a live stream, and he had some interesting things to say about his feelings towards some of the booking, whether being descript or nondescript about it. He was saying, you know, does it mean I always agree with every booking decision? Do I agree with every storyline? No. He did go into a little bit of his perception of the Punk incident and maybe how things were handled there, saying that he didn't feel that he agreed with some of the way things went down. And he could understand especially how something you and I talked about and I brought up way, way back, would it have been the best time to go see this guy after he's exhausted and beat up and everything else? But there was a lot of commentary in there that had people going, where does Kenny really lay on this? Now, I'm not going to ask you to speak for his personal opinion, but have you heard from Kenny at all as far as anything else, like as far as his injury goes, as far as his outlook towards returning to the ring and just how he's doing overall?
I mean, I'm in contact with him constantly about his injury, but that's literally all I ask him about, because I think that the rest is, you know, I mean, there's nothing else. That's the only thing that
it's his business too, right? Yeah.
But I'm as someone who knows him, and like I would do with any wrestler that I know, you know, and any wrestler in any company. But yeah, I try to check in with him on his injury just to be supportive of the guy. And you know, he's having surgery soon. I don't know the date yet, but you know, I think the last I heard, he was waiting for a date. And you know, as far as coming back, I mean, I don't even think about that right now. I mean, after he has surgery and all that, maybe we could come up with some sort of an idea. And I don't expect him back anytime soon. You know, his experience was very bad. You know, unfortunately, you know, what happened is that his pain threshold from being a pro wrestler is incredible. And that served him very badly in this one, because he was in a lot of pain. And, you know, thinking that, oh, you know, something that I did in the ring flared up, right? But it wasn't. And that's, you know, I mean, he came close to death on this. It was really a bad situation. It's going to take a while for, you know, him to come back. And, you know, he has good days and bad days. I'm sure this has been the toughest challenge of his life when it comes to, you know, this is far worse than any pro wrestling injury he's ever had.
And I guess that's kind of where I was leaning towards. And again, we'll wait to hear from him before we think of anything. But yeah, just the prospective outcome on him even returning to the ring, like when you've talked to him, is that a goal that he said he has?
I'm sure he'd like to, but it's nothing that I even discuss with him, because it's premature to discuss with him. When you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, I mean, then, you know, and a time frame, you know, then it'd be one thing. I'm sure he'd love to return. They have the feud set up for him in Okada, you know, with one of his, you know, arguably the greatest opponent of his career, and certainly the person who put him on the map in a, he was already on the map, but Okada put him on the map in a giant way. Yeah. And they haven't wrestled in, you know, like 6 years now, just because of circumstances and everything. And, that's a kind of hard one, because if they go back and have a match, it's like they have to have a great match. So he's got to be ready, but they've got, they've got this feud set up with him against him and Okada, and him with partners against the Young Bucks and Okada all set up. So I'm sure he wants to do it if he can.
Well, again, all the best going out to him. Again, there's people that love Kenny. There's people that don't love Kenny, but I've always respected Kenny as far as a wrestler. Like I said, I've told you numerous times, I saw him as a kid coming up in the business, and to see what he's done now. I mean, yeah, I hope he does get to come back on his terms and he feels good about it. So
he's a Hall of Famer, you know, and he's one of the best wrestlers of this generation. I mean, he's incredible, incredible in-ring performer.
All right, let's shift gears here. There were few WWE releases, hardly the massive cull that we used to see post WrestleMania, but it was still a significant list of especially international talents here. There did seem to be a bit of commentary, especially towards the Indian talents from them. I mean, this almost smells like a rumbling of a plan of something else happening. You know, maybe somebody's going to try and do another promotion in India or something like that. But with the names that have been released, Xia Li, Jinder Mahal, Veer, Sangha, and Zion Quinn. These are names who some have said they asked for the release. Others have said it's just is what it is, and it's come to be what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, in the sense of, it's very obvious, with the exception of Zion Quinn is a guy, you know, they had in developmental for years and years and years. One of the lessons of the Zion Quinn thing is that in that company, I mean, at one point, you know, good look was something that you get chance after chance. And I mean, they, you know, they gave him chances. But, you know, they brought him to the main roster and then just didn't use him. If you don't use a guy, I can understand letting him go. And that actually goes for every one of these people. Now, with the other ones, the key to all of them is they were all, the reason every one of them got chances was because they looked at this thing and they wanted to expand. You know, Xia Li was brought up way early because they wanted a Chinese superstar. But then after she was brought up, they never used her. So it's kind of like... And Veer, you know, Veer had pushes, and after a couple of weeks, they would always give up on him because after squashing guys for 5 weeks, they never could figure out what to do with them.
Right.
You know, Jinder they hadn't used in years other than the thing with The Rock and then that one title match. What it tells me basically is that the old regime had a lot of emphasis on, look at the population of China, look at the population of India. We need stars there to have our, Yao Ming type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, our local star to just, you know, set that place on fire and all that, right? And this is, after years and years and years, obviously that has been given up on. And another key to this is that you use those local stars, you know, like UFC's used with the Zhang Weili, to build your rights, you know, your media rights in those markets. Mm-hmm. And the key is with everything going to Netflix, which is actually the key to this whole story, is basically with everything going to Netflix.
Yeah.
There's no need for those local rights fees because all your stuff is on Netflix now internationally. So the idea of trying to get bigger rights fees in India by featuring India stars and, do some India-based shows like they tried a couple of times, it's kind of out the window now. You know, so, I mean, they're not going to work with Sony 6 after this deal's up. So when you look at the future, they're looking for stars for Netflix. They're not looking for stars for Sony 6 anymore. And that's where, you know, Veer and Sangha, especially Veer, you know, who was, you know, somewhat of a famous celebrity in India because of his trying to play Major League Baseball and winning the contest and having the movie and the movie about him and everything.
Right.
And Jinder to an extent, because he had that run as WWE champion when they really were hyper-focused, like everything, if you remember that period, was about, we got to build up India. We made
absolutely. Yeah,
that's all out. Obviously, it's all out the window. So that's basically, I think, the story is this is an, I mean, I don't think anyone put two and two together, but that's what this is. This is basically the offshoot of the Netflix deal.
I actually never would have thought of that at all until you said it. And it's an interesting perspective, though, because, I mean, Netflix, you would think, would want to have representation internationally. I thought, if anything, it might actually lead to more representation, but I guess
Netflix just wants a worldwide property, not a market specific property. If Netflix wanted, you know, we need more stars from this place, they'd have them. That's what they would do in a heartbeat. But, you know, I think that they're looking for the best possible product, and they're not going to get a $50 million jump in rights fees in India. It's not going to happen. They're going to get, if they get a jump, it's going to be in 10 years when every one of these people would have been gone anyway. And it's going to be on an international thing. It isn't going to be the Indian market.
Now, I've got a bit of a Homer approach to this because, I mean, I was around when he was coming up in the Indies and, him and his brother especially were working with us in the PWA in Edmonton and the old iteration of Stampede in Calgary and other places. But I feel that Jinder was always a missed opportunity, especially when he came back after the WWE Championship run, the big run. And there was that thing, like you said, with The Rock and then with the title match with Rollins and those things that kind of came up. Am I being a little biased here, do you think? Or do you think that there was some opportunity with Jinder they may have missed?
I don't know. I mean, they'd given up on Jinder years ago. I mean, he was used kind of to troll people in The Rock thing. He actually did very well in that segment. And they gave
huge,
him-
yeah.
Yeah. I thought he did a good job there. And then they gave him the main event. But then they stopped using him after the match with Seth. You know, I thought then, could they have put him in something? Sure. But they didn't. You know, I mean, they made the decision that, they want to go with, there's only a finite number of positions on that Raw roster, you know, to push. And they decided that he was not one of them. And that's the way the decision went down.
Either way, I know there's a lot of people from here in Alberta that are excited at the possibility of having him show up again in even the local scene. And who knows what he wants to do, but all the best to that guy.
Yeah. I don't know if he wants to go back to doing indies. I mean, everyone has a different mentality. You're not going to see anything for 90 days for all of them because they're all under the non-compete, but, you know, we'll see if they're Mustafa Ali, who wants to work everywhere, or we'll see if they're Elias, you know, who we don't see anywhere.
It's funny you bring up Mustafa Ali had a big part in the Rebellion pay-per-view that happened with TNA, and what a show that was. A few surprises here talking about talents on the move. We saw Sami Callihan come back from MLW. Presumably there's now a deal with TNA. Matt Hardy now saying that he's a free agent despite showing up in a world title program in TNA. So we're seeing TNA put a move on here as far as that goes. And with guys like Mustafa Ali and Nick Nemeth, who are all building up here, is TNA becoming maybe the new AEW as far as a place that the talents aren't with WWE anymore are looking to get to?
I think it's just, it's the other option. AEW is not jumping on everybody. You know, AEW has too many people. They're not jumping on everyone. And so then, you know, TNA is the next one down the ladder, and it's a big drop, but it's something there. And, if you want to wrestle, you know, I mean, the thing with Nick Nemeth and with Ali is they're not so much TNA as they're just working where they can and, you know, work in New Japan as well. So there's a lot of New Japan TNA, and that's, you know, you want to keep in the business and you want to have a good performances. You know, if you've got that thing on your shoulder going like WWE made a mistake with me, I'm going to go prove it. You know, New Japan's actually the place to go because you either sink or swim there. And TNA is a place you can go because New Japan, you're not going to be working full time. So it's a good combo if, you know, you're not going to AEW.
I just find it fascinating that all these names are showing up in TNA all of a sudden, but a lot of them are saying that they're not exclusive to TNA. So it seems to be kind of a place to get a little bit of a kick, a little bit of cash, and then they can still go and do whatever they want to do internationally or even on the indies here. But TNA definitely seems to be making some sort of play to maybe even go after that number two spot, even though, like you said, it's a bit of a climb.
Unless AEW somehow doesn't get a television deal, it's impossible for them to have a number two slot. The difference is just, it's way too big. You know,
right.
I mean, you're talking about...
Or maybe they just want to establish themselves as that solid number three for now. You know, like we've said before, there's nothing wrong with being in the pack, right?
Yeah, look, they could have sold the company if they wanted to Scott D. Amore, and they didn't. So they're in with the company. They had a chance to sell it. They own a TV station, and it's the number one show on the station. So that's, you know, as far as that goes, if you usually don't want to get rid of your number one show.
Fair enough. Okay, some interesting words from a WWE president, Nick Khan, saying that the tentpole PLEs are going to be in North America, including USA and Canada specifically. But they're looking at a lot of the secondary shows like Backlash, which is coming up in France, like the other shows are going to be happening. We've got the one in Germany coming up in a bit. We've got all these other secondary pay-per-views, PLEs coming up, more and more being international. Is this maybe going back to what we were talking about with Netflix here, maybe a chance to appease international Netflix subscribers to bring something to them?
No. They can. It's because they can get more money from local governments for the B shows outside of the United States and Canada. That's the thing that they're doing. And them and UFC both. I mean, that's the Endeavor battle plan, is try to do as many shows as you can where you are paid millions of dollars up front by local municipalities to bring the show in. And WWE essentially, when it comes to pay-per-views, and what they're looking at now is doing a two-day thing. You know, the Friday night SmackDown and then the Saturday pay-per-view.
Right.
And that's what they're trying to sell to as many places as they can, because those places don't get regular WWE shows. You know, it's not like we want to sell it to San Antonio, Texas. Well, San Antonio gets shows every year. Maybe they'll buy, you know, maybe the government will buy the Royal Rumble, you know, because that's a stadium show, but they're not going to spend any money to buy Backlash and put it at the local arena. You know what I mean? Right. It's like they get shows at local arena. So it's just it's exactly what UFC is doing with their pay-per-views. They're trying to sell as many of them to overseas governments.
We've talked a lot, obviously, already about AEW and what's going on with Dynasty tonight. We've talked about the build for the future here as far as what could be coming up with stars. Where do you think AEW needs to put their focus on coming up after this PLE? And what do you think is the main objective for them for the rest of this year?
I think the main objective for the rest of the year is to build for the future. But unfortunately, when you build for the future, you sacrifice the present. But we're at a certain point. I just think that it should be trying to get as much out of Will Ospreay, you know, try to do something with Mercedes and some of the women, you know, upgrade that, get Britt Baker back, get Jimmy Hayter back, get Adam Page and Swerve back going again in some form, because they've left that thing to where that may happen in the next couple of weeks or even tonight for all I know. But I would say focus on your key storylines and don't do too many storylines. And that's hard to say, because the problem with AEW is they do way too many storylines. And by doing that, the key ones just become one of 50 or one of 20 or whatever, instead of like maybe focus on 6 or 8. But, you know, the chips are going to fall where they may. I mean, AEW's success or failure is at the negotiation table this year. They're either going to be in a situation where they're in trouble if they don't get the right deal, or they'll be in a situation where they can be profitable, or they'll be in a situation where they can be wildly profitable. That's one of the reasons why I think they did the Punk thing is that they want it, it is very important right now, even more than the pay-per-view number. Long term, I'd say the pay-per-view number is the most important. Mm-hmm. But this year, the reality is the TV numbers are the most important, because that's what's going to determine not just interest from WBD, but interest across the board.
We're going to be done here, but just that entire statement brought up something interesting that Tony Khan had said on the media call this week leading up to the pay-per-view. A reporter had asked him about the fan reaction to running the Punk footage, and Tony basically ignored that part of it and said, well, TBS was happy.
TBS was happy with the rating.
Do you think that this is Tony showing his cards and saying he's willing to sacrifice even goodwill with the fans just to try and pop that number? Because the numbers went back down this past week.
The number is what it was going to be. They went against a giant NBA game, and it's going to be down even more this week. Maybe it won't, but you know, going live on the West Coast is going to cost them 8%. So he's probably going to have to hotshot something really big, because there's nobody more aware of the fact that going live on West Coast costs you lots of West Coast viewers, because you're on from 5 to 7 and people aren't even home from work yet. Right. So because of that, I kind of expect that Tony's going to do something on tonight's show to try and build something really big. You know, and again, he's got the IWGP title with Moxley and Hobbs, but I expect he's going to try something real big this week, because the TV number, it's going to be a very tough night, and it's going to be tough for, like I said, for everyone in wrestling until these nights don't have NBA playoff games and NHL playoff games once NHL gets into the final rounds. It's a tough period. It's going to be a tough period for everyone.
But the question still, Dave, does AEW have some goodwill work to do with their fans, do you think? Because I'm starting to feel like they kind of do.
I see the complaints, but you know, to me, it's like that one I'm going to know at the end of the week, because I would see people complain about WWE at times, yeah, and it was valid, and the numbers were down. And sometimes I'd see people complain about WWE, like, they during the Roman Reigns thing, when they would keep putting Roman Reigns over, I'm going to stop watching. And then the numbers kept going up.
Right.
So it's like, I got to rely on the numbers. This week's number, you know, the pay-per-view number is going to tell me, you know, it's like, is there work to do? Did they hurt themselves? The rating on Wednesday didn't give any indication they hurt themselves or that they helped themselves with that hotshot thing. I got a week out of it. The next week it was, you know, where I would have expected it to be. The pay-per-view number, we're going to find out. So it's an ongoing learning experience.
There you have it. All right. Well, Dave, thank you again for your time as always. And again, like we said at the start of this thing, people are going to vote with their dollars, and we'll see what the numbers turn out to be. All right, Dave, what are some things people can read about from your latest publications at WrestlingObserver.com?
Yeah, giant issue this week. We had talked to several of the biggest names in wrestling. The subject was, is Vince McMahon going to come back and try something? So that was like the beginning of it, but then it really got into people in WWE really going into the minutia of what happened in the last, year and a half, and especially what happened before WrestleMania 39, as far as the decision to have Roman Reigns beat Cody, and just a lot of different things on like who deserves credit for the bloodline, who deserves credit for this, did Vince set the table to make Triple H look good, which some people claim, or did Triple H overcome, you know, Vince to make himself look good, you know, by doing a good job. So it's a lot of really interesting stuff there. We actual numbers of people who watched WrestleMania, the real number, you know, as best we can estimate, which is very, very, very high. Obviously, you know, talking about this pay-per-view, UFC 300, big article on Sue Aitchison, who was let go by WWE, who was, you know, community service, you know, really exemplary employee for years and years and years. Story on Tony Jones, who's a good friend of mine that was from Beyond the Mat, if you remember that movie, and local independent wrestlers, a very, you know, passed away tragically last week. Very interesting story, amateur wrestling and things like that. Just all of the, you know, all the regular business news that we get into every week, but lots and lots of stuff in the issue. Yeah.
I always remember Tony Jones as being the guy that said flat out, you don't get somebody to work with you without paying them something. That was my favorite line from him in that whole movie was that. But all right. I love it. Well, Dave, thank you as always. And we'll talk to you again next week. Get your thoughts on Dynasty and a bunch more. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Have a great week.
Coming up, the AEW Dynasty card is hours away. Joe Aguinaldo stops by to chat about it with me, and we'll see if we're even close in what we think is going to happen tonight. Plus, a conversation with Chris Masters and more. Thanks for downloading. We'll be back right away.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcast.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
Well, it seemed fitting to bring along an old friend as we get into AEW Dynasty tonight, live on pay-per-view from St. Louis, Missouri, the home of Randy Orton. He won't be there, obviously. But Joe Aguinaldo is here. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. Happy Sunday. Happy pay-per-view day. Honestly, I want you to answer this honestly. You're a guy that still keeps tabs on AEW quite a bit. Are you going to be watching this show tonight?
I'm going to try, but I'm not going to say go out of my way to... Like, if I miss it tonight, I'll figure it out later after the fact. But
okay,
this to me isn't a tentpole pay-per-view. I mean, don't get me wrong. It looks like a very good card.
And That's the thing. I think that if the energy had been focused on the matches that are on this card, really, instead of all the other stuff that's been going on, especially around AEW with the CM Punk stuff and everything else. I mean, I think all that stuff is really taken away from what on paper is a really good looking card for tonight.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole card looks good, but there are four matches that we should absolutely be like, you know, especially as wrestling fans, the AEW wrestling fans, there are at least four matches here where we should be like raving about this card.
Yes.
And I'll admit, like, as much as I have been an AEW fan since its inception, I got to tell you, I'm a little cold right now, especially after all the CM Punk crap. Like, I just thought that was really dumb.
Well, and again, we don't want to poo-poo the wrestlers. We don't want to poo-poo the wrestling.
No.
What we're talking about both here is the build going up to this show, because again, I mean, remember about a month ago, and it was that long ago, was when the contract signing happened between Swerve and Samoa Joe, and it was signed in Swerve's own blood, and, you know, he took the pen and ran across. I mean, like, that gets me excited for this match. I don't know if I've really thought about this match since then.
No, and that's, unfortunately, that is the sad reality that we're at right now, so...
All right. Well, let's motor through the card here, because people, of course, are getting ready for the show tonight, those that are watching it. We have a few 0 hour matches here. There's the AEW Trios Champions, the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn against the ROH Six-Man Champions, Bullet Club Gold. Trent Beretta taking on Matt Sydal, and Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata taking on Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. Those are the matches there. But as far as getting into what to expect tonight, I think we'll start with the FTW Championship, Hook taking on his quote-unquote mentor, Chris Jericho. Now, the boys over at the ACT, if you've been listening to their show, they're done with this already. They're just wanting it to be over. But I don't know. Is there any scenario here you see that helps out Hook or makes Chris Jericho seem a little more badass, I guess?
No. I mean, I think... Like, much respect to Jericho, I do like Hook, but I just don't think that this is the program for Hook yet. He's not, like, I understand that they're pushing him, but he's not at this level yet. Like, he shouldn't be in a car or in a program with Jericho. Put him in with, like, Roderick Strong or Kyle O'Reilly or something like that. But the Jericho thing, I don't think is helping him. And also, I think Jericho needs to maybe take a step back, like, go away for a while.
Saying that.
Go away for a while. Like, this, I mean, this is pretty much the same storylines that we've seen with him pretty much through his whole AEW run, like with MJF, with, like, you know, the Jericho Appreciation Society. It's all kind of the same thing. And it's like, dude, you need to, like, step back, go into the shadows for a while, maybe reset, and let's freshen you up a bit. I'm going to pick Hook, but because it makes sense. But I really, this is a match where I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Okay, well, I'm going to say that the only way this comes out good is if Hook, like, wipes the mat with him in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, but he kind of did that already in their last match. I think they had a match on Dynamite or something. And it was like, and that match reminded me kind of like a very poor man's Brock Lesnar versus Cena, where Lesnar was just suplex sitting the dude out of his shoes.
Right.
And Hook basically did the same thing. Right. And I was like, oh, okay, it's a squash match. And I thought it would be done by then, but no.
And I'll take it a step further and say, when does this elevate to being Bret Hart versus Vince McMahon, where it just becomes somebody beating a very old man for several minutes.
and that's the other part, like Hook beating up Jericho, I think it's not helping him right now. And I mean, okay, Jericho, as good as he is, not good enough to put Hook over like that.
All right, well, let's talk about two talents here that I feel are on the cusp of being something great down the line here. Julia Hart has done some amazing things since her transition into a singles wrestler. Is there work to do? Sure, but who cares? She's making herself a star. Willow Nightingale, automatically popular. The TBS championship is on the line. Who walks away with that belt tonight?
You got to keep it on Julia Hart for exactly what you just said. She is doing some really good work. And I think it only benefits her more, or it only benefits her to keep the belt and keep Willow chasing it. Like, everyone's digging the storyline. It's too soon to switch that belt yet.
The only reason I could see them wanting to change it is if this Willow and Mercedes thing turns around and Mercedes goes after the belt from Willow right away. But why even bother if you don't need the belt in that rivalry?
Yep.
Which you won't. I think you're good there. So I'll side with you on that one too. Julia remains champion. Okay. The Continental Crown Championship. Which one is this? I don't remember anymore. Okada won off of
Eddie Kingston.
Our good friend and compatriot Eddie Kingston taking on Pac. Is this a walkaway match for Okada?
I think it'll be a good match, but if Okada loses, I'll be shocked. I mean, I think you got to keep it on Okada and establish him in AEW, right?
All right. So far, I think we're kind of 3-for-3 on this right now, you and I. Let's go to Roddy Strong versus Kylie O'Reilly for the AEW International Championship. Roddy has the title, and Kylie does not.
Hey.
What do you think?
You know what? I would like to see Kyle O'Reilly win this, because I think, you know, him coming back, I think he needs something to establish him coming back. I know that maybe the traditional train of thought or school of thought would be Roddy winning, but I think Kyle wins this one. I think you need that to elevate him.
Yeah, you know what? We're kind of on the same mind here, but that's interesting. This match is kind of interesting. I guess it's just a way to get some names on the pay-per-view, but Adam Copeland, Mark Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston taking on the House of Black. Remember the House of Black, who everybody said, oh, they're leaving, they're done, it's over. Yeah, they're still here. So as far as these two trios, who takes it, you think?
I really want House of Black to win, just because I really like House of Black. So that's who I'm picking.
Okay, but you got three big names. Copeland, obviously. Mark Briscoe, who is now ROH champion. And Eddie Kingston, who's still a force with a couple of titles hanging around his waist.
Let me also preface this that I will never pick Eddie Kingston to win a match. So House of Black it is for me.
All right. Spite picking by Joe Aguinaldo, everybody.
Hell yeah.
You know what? I'm going to say House of Black, and I hate to say this because I like Eddie, but I think Eddie, if anybody's going to take the pin.
Yeah, and I hope that happens. Then I'll laugh.
Then it puts his titles in contention. You know, it makes him a little more interesting overall. So
I'll cackle when that happens, too.
Dream match scenario that, again, just kind of happens as they do in AEW as of late, but Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay.
Oh, this is going to be insane. And I don't see how Ospreay loses. I got to pick Ospreay on that. I think at least what I'd like to think is that they're starting to build him for the eventual like all-in match or whatever coming up in the next little while. And, you know, he's your big signing. You keep him strong.
Yeah. Well, Dave Meltzer says that by all in, he's going to be in that world title picture. We said that weeks ago on this show. So, I mean, it makes sense if you're just watching as a casual fan, even to use those words. All right. AEW Women's World Championship. Timeless Toni Storm taking on Thunder Rosa, who has been on quite the resurgence since coming back from her back injury here. Do you think she's a big enough threat to take the title away from Toni?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be a good match, but I gotta stick with Timeless Toni Storm.
I'm sensing shenanigans. Mariah May is going to play a factor in this. And yeah, man, we're almost exactly on for picks here. For the AEW World Championship, we started off talking about it, just like they started off talking about it a month and a half ago. The AEW World Championship, Samoa Joe defending against arguably one of the hottest rising stars in that company right now in Swerve Strickland. Does Swerve get the title tonight? Does that make sense? Or does it make sense to have the chase continue?
Swerve does not finish the story tonight. You continue that chase.
Wow.
I think the other part of this too is that, like, with all the shenanigans that have been going on with AEW, Samoa Joe is arguably your most stable thing right now. You stay with that. And come on, let's face it. We were just talking about Ospreay at All In. Samoa Joe, Ospreay, come on. Come on. Right. Swerve losing, I don't think hurts him, but I understand that sooner rather than later, if they're going to make that flip, they got to make that flip. But I think tonight's too soon.
You know what, Joe? I think we're almost 100% in agreement here, which means that we got to be wrong somewhere down this thing. I'll tell you right now, for my sake, like WrestleMania this year, I killed it in predictions. That's the first time ever I've killed it in predictions. And so I think that my logic sense is more in tune with what WWE is doing right now. And for me, AEW is always the constant lottery surprise, like just the jumble of potential finishes and outcomes comes out of the tumbler and each match gets something different. So, I mean, what we've said and what you've kind of elaborated on and I've agreed with in a lot of ways all makes sense. But the question is, will it make sense tonight? And if so, where does that take us next? I don't know. You don't know. But one thing I do know, Joe, always love having you stop by. Thank you for helping us take a look at the card for AEW Dynasty tonight. Anything you'd like to say or maybe sing before you go?
No. Let's not do that.
For those that missed it, Joe did a special intro that he didn't know he was doing for the ACT this past week. So if you missed it, listen to yesterday's alternate commentary table. Even if you only listen for the first minute, you should listen to the whole show. But even if you listen for the first minute, you will hear Joe Aguinaldo in fine form. All right, my friend, I know you got some family stuff to do. Enjoy your Sunday. And if you're watching it, enjoy the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Still to come. Yeah, we're not done yet. A quick conversation with the masterpiece, Chris Masters, Chris Adonis. He was at a Dungeon Wrestling show recently and literally packing his bag as we went. It was still an interesting conversation as we talk about what his goals are moving forward. He just had a big run in Australia with Bret Hart and Mike Rallis and a few other great contenders at a big event that happened down there. And we'll also look at some of your feedback going into tonight's AEW pay-per-view, as well as some of the comments I made last week here on the show. Thanks for being here. Still lots more to come.
This is McGuire on Wrestling. Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
Okay, well, I think this is the first time I've had a dress and chat before with a wrestler in all these interviews I've done. But
there's a first for everything, I guess, right?
This is how packed your schedule has been, Chris, but you're actually leaving Calgary now, headed to Puerto Rico to defend your Universal Championship tomorrow.
Yeah, no kidding, right? This is crazy. My flight's in, what, like 3 hours, so holy shit. We're just going to hope everything works out okay here, you know?
So to paint the picture of the scene, we're in the room right now. You successfully defended your Stu Hart Heritage Championship tonight, and you got your gear all out, the suitcase is wide open.
I'm literally just throwing stuff in the bag kind of at this point. Like, this is not how it would usually go. There would be a lot more strategic planning to this, but I'm kind of thinking, like, wow, I'm a little behind schedule, I think.
Well, I appreciate you still taking the time to talk with us here, especially after what went down tonight. You had an absolute knockdown dragout with Steve Maclin before the show. And this is why we're having this chat right now. And it might actually distract you enough to stop packing. But I don't know. You're doing pretty furious packing here. Before the show, Bret Hart and Chris Adonis had a one-on-one together. I got to stand in the middle of this. And he called you the greatest dungeon wrestling champion of the most important wrestling championship in Canada.
Yeah.
Take us through that moment. What's going on in your mind?
You know, I'm still processing it. I mean, he said that amongst some other things. And, like, coming from a guy like that, I can't help but almost be like, you got to be kidding. He's joking. He's lying. But, like, Brett's a very unfiltered guy, as we all know. And he says what he means and means what he says. And so when I think about that part of it, it's like, oh, wow, what a freaking honor it is to have a guy that I looked up to. And, you know, most everybody from my generation did. But, like, Brett was one of my guys. Like, he's an inspiration to me. And so, like, you know, it means so much to me now. And then when I think of the younger version of me, how proud and like how like just baffled he would be at the fact that, you know, I've worked with HBK and like now at this point in my career getting to work with Bret Hart, two guys that were, you know, everything to me, man. Like that to me, that was the greatest rivalry ever in wrestling. And those were the two best performers in wrestling. And, you know, to get praise from him just means everything, you know.
Well, you brought it up yourself, and I said this to you after we were done the thing. I said, you know, where Brett, quote, gets himself in trouble sometimes is that he just tells the truth. He's very, very honest. He's very frank, and I don't think he would put that label on you without meaning it, because he's going to stand by it here. We've talked before about your transition from the Chris Masters we knew back in the day as to who you are today, and the technical prowess and the way you've really, really honed your game and really made it a technical showcase, as well as, you know, relying on the image and body and size and everything. And so to get that kind of praise and to get that kind of technical work under your belt now, how do you think that's reflecting in your work in front of the fans? Like, how do you think they're receiving it?
I just think people are starting to recognize that, you know what I mean? Like, I'm one of the, you know, more underrated talents in all professional wrestling today. And, you know, that I can go out there and I can dance with anybody. And, you know, if anything, I'm doing the best work of my career 20 years in, you know, which in pro wrestling, it's a beautiful thing because, you know, as long as you keep yourself in shape and take care of yourself and you obviously get smarter at this, you can become even better, you know, because it's not just all physical. A lot of it's mental. And so, yeah, I just feel like I'm better than I've ever been.
I love how you talk about your timing and really getting your pacing in the match. And I've seen you work with opponents now on a few occasions, and just getting the chance to really share what you've learned and got to know over your time wrestling. You're obviously still in a position where you're still learning new things every day, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You never stop learning. That's one of the fun things about wrestling is, you know, you just keep getting, you know, you keep learning. It's just not something you can master in a year, 5 years, even 10 years.
I got, again, thank you so much for even taking this time here. It's amazing how fast you're packing. This probably isn't the first time you've had to pack.
It's a mess, though, man. Like, there's no word. It's just, who knows what's going on in there. I just got to get to the hotel. But, yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a special day. And, you know, praise from the Hitman means the world.
It's great getting to know you and just getting to see you work here. And it's a pleasure having you here in Dungeon Wrestling and on the McGuire Wrestling.
Thanks so much for your recognition, man. It means the world, even from you, because you know, hit the nail right on the head when it comes to everything I've been trying to do. Sorry about that.
It's all good. Get out of here.
All right, take care, brother.
McGuire on wrestling.
Just listening back to that, I forgot just how panicked we were because, again, he had to go to Puerto Rico, then he had to go to Australia, and then, we're all backstage and whatever, and I just got to relax afterwards. I went over to Hitman's Bar, and we had some laughs and called it a night, but that is Chris Masters, Chris Adonis, Chris Mordetsky, I'll even go as far as to say, and that was not an interview that I even really led with as a headline to listen to this show, because we will have better chats down the road. But I love having these moments where you get to see these guys and girls living their dreams and getting their reaction to things like that. And if you haven't seen the clip I'm talking about, it's on my Instagram. It's myself, Bret Hart, and Chris, and Bret says some really incredible things about Chris in that clip. So find me at McGuire Show on Instagram. It's a couple weeks back now. You'll have to sift through some radio station stuff and probably stuff with my cats or something stupid, but it is there and it's pretty cool and worth checking out. So let's shift gears now to AEW tonight as we wrap up this week's show. A lot of great commentary on the Team MOW Maguire on Wrestling Facebook page, which if you have not joined yet, please consider doing because there's some great chatter there. And the one thing I really like about it is that it's all really respectful too. People aren't knocking each other down or making fun of each other. It's agree, disagree, and here's why. I asked the question earlier today, your thoughts going up to AEW Dynasty, is it enough for you to vote with your dollars for or against the show? Some great comments coming. Matthew Smith, keeping it real simple, saying, nope, that's a negative. Devin says, not really, but it seems like the cards with the worst builds have the best cards for AEW. Plus, on paper, this looks like it rules. Yeah, match-wise, like Joe and I said, like Dave and I said, it looks like a great show. Has the stuff around it made you interested enough to spend your money, though, or are you going to look for highlights later? Blaine Vandergrind says, the match quality should make up for the build. A couple of the matches have decent backstories, but I feel some of the angles were rushed, like Strong versus O'Reilly. Absolutely. He says they could have done so much more considering their long history. Dave Drashiff says, I know I'm probably going to be the proverbial old man yelling at cloud here, but I wish that we had fewer AEW pay-per-views. He says, remember back when they were quarterly, or every 8 or so weeks. This is like crying for 2-hour Raws, I know, but you know what I mean? Yeah, I do know what you mean. Sometimes less is more, but as wrestling has taught us, and somebody else once famous said, more is more. Vinny B says, I haven't purchased an AEW pay-per-view since that exploding barbed wire debacle. Wow, that's going way back. He says, they really need to drop the price to like $20 or $30 Canadian to soften the blow of a possible dumpster fire. Tell us how you really feel, Vinny. Our pal Easy says, Tony needs to get with the times when you can get WWE PLEs for almost nothing. $5 literally American on Peacock and free with certain things like I have Instacart Plus and get free Peacock. Why would you want to pay $50 or whatever for a show that had no build and no momentum? I don't know if it had no build, but I get what you're saying. He says, I've been a fan since they launched, but this is just getting absurd. He's so far behind in terms of the way people consume media. Interesting. Interesting, because that was one of AEW's strengths at the beginning. Remember, they were putting stuff on YouTube all the time and really wanting to get into social media. And now, like, WWE has just destroyed that market. And Cody says, I'm still turned off from the all-in backstage footage and the Ospreay rant. I usually always buy, but not this time. Interested to see if I make any kind of impact on the final numbers. Well, Cody, you will. It'll be negative one, which, you know, if enough of you do that, then it sends a message. If people don't care and they buy the thing anyways, well, then I guess Tony is doing what he's doing. All right. Before I go, I wanted to thank you all for listening to last week's episode. Some people called it a rant. I really try not to rant because I think that's irresponsible. I always try and have a point to what we're saying here, but I get it. It was a rather long monologue talking about the positives and negatives of wrestling fandom today. And what it comes down to is when you listen to this show, I know that you are voting with your time. We ask you not to vote with your dollars, but if you want to, you know, support the show, you can, financially or otherwise. That's not what we're here for. For me, it's just seeing that hit count go up, seeing the listener count go up, seeing the interaction on the social media go up. That to me is how I can positively contribute to pro wrestling, and by bringing y'all along for the ride, y'all are making that dream happen. So I just wanted to say thanks again, and hopefully it wasn't too negative or too much of a rally cry last week. I just felt that we all needed to take a breath and really remember this is just pro wrestling. Nobody dies, hopefully, and we get to enjoy it. I hope you have enjoyed this week's show. I am out of here. Got to get ready for some morning radio. So until next week, as always, my friend, if you're watching the show tonight, enjoy it. Let us know what you think on the Team MOW Maguire on Wrestling Facebook page. And if you're not, well, we'll tell you about it next week and a lot more. Until then, as always, thanks for listening and letting me do what I do. Stop by MaguireShow.com. Until next time, play safe, drive safe. Ah, be seeing ya.